CheckYourAbortionClinic.org, founded by a former abortion clinic worker, researches and posts health inspection information for abortion clinics online. This is a great service, but in regions where abortion is supported, there is little pressure on the fulfillment of health inspection requirements. And where access to abortion is limited, judges have held access more important than quality and safety. Reticence to call an ambulance when something goes wrong during abortion, such as perforation of the uterus, seems to be another unique safety problem with many abortion clinics. This is attested to routinely by former clinic workers. The clinics have been known to ask the ambulance not to use a siren, which could clearly slow down arrival time. And according to a former abortion clinic workers, the concern of having an abortion on site is based mainly on the loss of business. So business is trumping women's safety. And for all the publicity about the good the abortion industry does for women, it is a serious business involving serious money. Planned Parenthood is about a $1.5 billion business, which is approximately twice the size of all the pro-life organizations in the U.S. By the way, not all states require that doctors perform many of the abortion procedures, including California. You don't have to have a physician perform many of the procedures. So I don't know if you've ever heard about Operation Rescue. Currently, Operation Rescue, what they do is they are tracking as many medical emergencies at abortion clinics throughout the country as they can. They regularly post these incidents on their website. When Operation Rescue is notified of an ambulance arriving at a clinic, they try to obtain the 911 calls to learn the nature of the injury. Operation Rescue is doing its best to provide a service to the public to expose the medical realities of abortion, which the industry does not want the public to know about. So this is an example of the kind of information you would find on the Operation Rescue website. And a lot of times the way Operation Rescue learns about these incidents is from the people who are on the sidewalk praying to that the women will not go in and have abortions. So here's a record from Boston. We note on the bottom that in Boston, they've actually stopped allowing the release of the 911 records for abortion-related medical emergencies. So there's absolutely tons of attempts and efforts and very effective ones to hide from the public what's really going on. And we're fortunate that we get a lot of information from former abortion clinic workers. So is abortion safe? With modern medical technology, particularly with antibiotics and better methods to control bleeding, abortion is considered a fairly safe procedure from a physical standpoint. In a gruesome irony, we have become very skilled at committing abortions. Having said that, women, amongst other things, do still suffer a range of physical consequences. Let's take the example of the most frequently performed abortion in the U.S., which is the first trimester suction D&C, which is performed most typically between 5 and 13 weeks. If the abortion is incomplete, meaning that not all the pieces of the baby were removed, infection can develop. Other risks are perforation or laceration of the uterus or cervix, potential damage to the intestine, bladder, and nearby blood vessels, and hemorrhage. Emergency surgery could be required, loss of ability to have another child, and even death. Risk increases with increased pregnancy term. In 2013, by one estimate, there were just over 660,000 abortions in the U.S., and at least four women were identified to have died as a result of complications from legal surgical abortion. The actual number of surgical abortion deaths is hard to know. We cannot get a precise number when it is often the case that death certificates do not include the role of the abortion in the death. Rather, the complication itself may only be listed. There are existing accusations that physicians and pathologists obscure the cause of death on the certificates to protect themselves from medical malpractice, lawsuits, medical board sanctions, the women's families, and of course, the abortion industry itself. Dr. Anthony Levitino, a former abortionist who stopped performing abortions after the death of his young daughter, believes that deaths related to abortion are underreported. According to Dr. Leventina, when it comes to abortion-related deaths, the death certificates do not necessarily cite the abortion. So he backs this this theory up. So for example, when abortion is incomplete and there's remaining parts of the body in the uterus and there's an infection that can develop, that can turn into sepsis, which can be fatal, a blood poisoning. But the death certificate will very likely say that the cause of death was sepsis and not refer to the abortion at all. Another area of unclarity is the long-term consequences of abortion. For example, there are studies linking abortion and specific types of breast cancer, which are well done, but this link has not been been completely accepted. Many argue that the potential long-term consequences should be included in informed consent. Often they are not. No discussion about current abortion procedures is complete without addressing medication abortions. The abortion pill is really important to be aware of because it represents something of a revolution in how abortion occur and plays and will continue to play a role in abortion policy. The FDA approved medical or chemical abortion in the United States in 2000 for use within the first 7 weeks of pregnancy. And currently, a woman can generally carry out medication abortion, which is essentially an induced miscarriage, up to 10 weeks into the pregnancy. Chemical abortion is especially painful and traumatic for women. During the chemical abortion, women are much more aware of the pain and visual reality of the abortion process, which may require days to complete. Hours of intense pain and bleeding and nausea happen regularly. Common symptoms during the process are heavy bleeding, nausea, vomiting, headaches, and dizziness. Two particular problems connected to this procedure are, one, it's hard to know when the bleeding is normal and when it crosses the line. How does a young woman at home know? And the expected symptoms of headache, nausea, etc. are the same symptoms one gets when you have an infection. So it's hard to know if what's happening is safe. It's very hard to manage, and hundreds of women have required blood transfusions. So chemical abortion is a two-step process. The woman must first take the woman must take two pills over the course of 2 to 4 days, and the abortion occurs outside the medical facility, usually at a woman's home, often over a toilet, to which they are directed by clinics. Mifepristone, also known as the abortion pill Mifeprex or RU486, is given at the first office clinic visit. This drug blocks the effects of progesterone. Progesterone is a hormone the mother's body needs and produces to grow a healthy baby. Mifepristone blocks the progesterone so that the developing baby is deprived of essential nutrients. Basically, the baby is starved and dies. The second pill is misoprostol, and that's taken about 36 to 72 hours after taking the first pill. This drug causes uterine contractions and the expelling of the remains of the baby. This process may take a few hours or as long as a few days. The woman will need to be examined 2 weeks later to ensure the abortion was complete. So this is not always complete. Very often, a woman will need to go through a surgical abortion anyway. And it's the success range is 2%, or the in 2% to 10% of cases, the procedure was unsuccessful. So in those numbers of cases, women have to endure the surgical process as well. Although these abortions occur very early in pregnancy, remember up to 10 weeks, women have been horrified to find recognizable fetal remains, often after being told at the clinic that it was just a blob of tissue. Regarding safety, like many other aspects of abortion, it can be hard to determine accuracy. So the American Civil Liberties Union has a fact sheet, and there basically says that there were no deaths reported. The Food and Drug Administration says that there are 24 deaths associated with this process since 2000. 8 cases of sepsis and 2 ectopic pregnancies. And the manufacturer, Danko, what they say is that serious infection has resulted in death in a very small number of cases. So I'm just putting up this range of information because, you know, we have to understand how confusing this can be for a young person going through this process. And you can see American Civil Liberties Union supports abortion. Of course, they're saying there are no deaths. The FDA has to be more careful. I mean, there's just nobody here who's really being compassionate about the women's safety. They're all kind of covering themselves or supporting an agenda. And so this is from the manufacturer. And then Planned Parenthood, they, on their consent form, their advising consent form, does say, what are the risks of abortion pill? It does say, death from medication abortion is very rare. That's true. The risk of death from childbirth is much greater. Ah, there's the clincher. So if you had any doubt, just go for this because you're more likely to die if you actually have a baby. So this is the kind of persuasion that's going on. Now, the abortion pill and ectopic pregnancy are particularly dangerous combination. When there's an ectopic pregnancy, the baby is outside the uterus, likely in the fallopian tube. The baby is growing, and if there's a rupture of the child, if the fallopian tube is ruptured, this can be a very quick death for the mother. It's a very dangerous situation. So ectopic pregnancies on abortion tests will show up as a pregnancy. So a young girl could go in, or anybody could go in, and take this pill and think that they've terminated their pregnancy. But the pill doesn't do anything. So we've had deaths that where women had taken this procedure and missed the fact of the ectopic pregnancy. One young woman to die after taking the abortion pill was 18-year-old Holly Patterson. Her father, Monty Patterson, attempted to convey the dangers of the abortion pill before a Congressional House of Representatives committee in 2006. Holding a picture of his daughter, Monty told the committee the tragic way Holly died after being given the drug at Planned Parenthood. 12 days after Holly's 18th birthday, on September 10, 2003, she walked into a Planned Parenthood clinic to be administered an RU-486 medical abortion regime. By the fourth day she was admitted to the ER, she complained of bleeding, cramping, constipation, and pain, but she was sent home. 7 days after taking RU-486, Holly returned to the same ER hospital complaining of weakness, vomiting, abdominal pain. Hours later, I was called to the hospital, where I found her surrounded by doctors and nurses, barely conscious and struggling to breathe. Holly was so weak she could barely hold on to my hand. I watched Holly succumb to a massive bacterial infection as a result of a drug-induced abortion with RU-486.